What a great group here today, and thank you for coming out. I can just sense your love and interest in the message I'm about to share with you. Oh boy, what do I do now? It's a question we've all asked ourselves any number of times, you know. I was having an oh boy, what do I do now moment. I was a young man. I had just put a 1953 transmission in my 1950 Oldsmobile. Well, I hadn't done it, but I had paid some fellas to do it. And I decided I was going to take it out and test it. There was three other fellas with me that I picked up, and then we got out on the highway. Now, it had rained during the day, and this was about 8 o'clock at night. This was a great car, folks. This Oldsmobile had a fiberglass hood, and you could see the motor inside of it. And the motor was all chromed, and it was 2 4-barrel carburetors. The car was way too fast for me. And I had flames on the side of the car that had been painted. Cool. The ladies loved it. Well, as I said, it was night. And I'd been told by the mechanics that there'd be 4 gear shifts in the transmission, and the last one ending at 85 miles an hour, well above the speed limit. So we took off, it was dark, and we got up to almost 80 miles an hour waiting for the last shift, and all of a sudden, we hit a flash flood on the highway, 3 to 4 feet of water. And when the car hit the water, it didn't hit it like a hard impact, it literally hit it and coasted up on the top of the water and glided along, and I was thinking, gee, this isn't what I expected. But slowly but surely, it began to roll over onto its top. And when it did, we were underwater. Now, 3 of the boys didn't have seat belts, you know, or none of us did because it was before then. So they ended up on the roof of the car. But I'm still holding onto the steering wheel upside down, and my head is rushing through water as we move along. I could hear the roof of the car scraping along the cement and the gravel, and that was probably about six inches or so from my head. Something happened at that moment. Something happened that has stayed with me ever since. As we were gliding along upside down, a wonderful, inspired thought occurred. And it was from this book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by the discoverer of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy. Actually, this idea was first introduced to me by my grandmother, who was a Christian Science practitioner, one who heals through prayer. And she told me, when she quoted this to me at the time, that it had saved her from drowning. And I've always, thinking back on that, wondered, was that the reason that that occurred to me at that moment, because my head was partially underwater? It is sort of an interesting thing. It's inscribed on many church walls. It reads, "Divine love always has met and always will meet every human need." Well, after thinking that, I felt absolutely fearless. I felt enveloped by a larger sense of being, what you might refer to as the supreme being. Now, I hadn't been in Sunday school for years, yet this idea appeared fresh and clear. It seemed natural to me that my friends and I would all be protected. There was no apprehension, no anxious care. And as the car came to a stop, I asked if everyone was okay, and then in the back seat I could hear a couple of voices mumbling, "Yeah, yeah." And so a passerby stopped and somehow managed to get the door opened on one side, and we all came tumbling out wet, but no worse for having had the experience. We had traveled about 50 yards, and the car had ended up on its roof on dry ground. And after the passerby opened the door, he commented, "I was afraid to look in. I didn't know what to expect." But that experience taught me that security was not to be found in matter. It is found in this enlarged sense of God that I was sharing with you, what you might call a heavenly atmosphere or the thought environment of divine mind. It was an undeniable sense that God, divine mind, was realizing me at that moment. And his realization of me was the dominant thought force that carried me through the experience. And since that incident, I've come to understand that this moment of realization was what we call in Christian Science Christ, the divine idea of God, coming to my thought to protect me, to save me, to deliver me into the presence of God. Of course, this produced safety. Now, this thought atmosphere of God is more fully realized through the study of this book, Science and Health. I use it every day. Most Christian Scientists use this book every day alongside the Bible. And it's been proven that an understanding of the presence of God brings security and harmony into one's life. I also learned during that instance that even death can't exist within the radius of this all-encompassing sense of good. The Apostle Paul indicated this when he said substantially that absolutely nothing could separate him from the love of God. Now, I continue to learn that in divine love, there is no hate. In immortal truth, which is another word for God, when capitalized, there is no dishonesty or crime. And in infinite life, death simply doesn't exist. And this knowledge acts as a saving and comforting law in our daily experience. And this is the law that cared for each of us in that car that evening. Now, considering one's own life experience, one might ask, but where was God when this occurred or when I lost this dear one? And I'm not certain I have sufficient wisdom to answer that question. But in the case of my accident, God proved his presence to me by the comfort and trust in him that I felt at the moment of impact. Quite frankly, it might very well have been the prayers of my grandmother that revealed his presence and was protecting all of us. I continue to learn that his comfort and his trust are readily available to all of us, even if it is after the fact. Even if there's an incident that's occurred that has sort of stripped us of our spiritual vitality, that God, in his infinite wisdom and mercy, provides us with a new spirit that will refurbish us, will renovate our thinking, will elevate us, will bring us to a higher, better sense of who we are. Now, the Bible speaks of this in the book of Psalms. It reads, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. In God, in him will I trust. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all his ways." So whether one feels lost, alone, or separated from good, the Bible declares that each has access to this secret place of the Most High through prayer to God. The psalmist understood that his prayers were a humble acknowledgement of God's deep and caring love for each of us, and that God is here, and that we can openly realize his actual presence now, at this very moment. And it's at this moment that we all need to get a better sense of what's going on in the world so that we can heal it. Right now, there are still those folks in Haiti who have no home after that major earthquake. Chile, the same thing. We have problems there in Iraq with people having water, electricity, and safety. And Pakistan itself has over 11 million refugees that are homeless because of the floods. This requires our prayer daily. Let me ask you a question. How does prayer work? I mean, we hear of people saying, maybe across the continent, well, I'll pray for you. And a lot of times the image is that somehow that prayer realized where that person is winging itself over time and distance to reach the consciousness of that individual. It's a common thought. But in Christian Science, we learn that prayer is effective in a different way. Prayer is the realization that there's only one true mind, one true consciousness, and that's God, infinite mind, that's doing all the knowing, all the realizing, all the understanding, all the establishment of His law. And so when that's being realized by the individual in prayer, that same sense of God is available to the individual being prayed for. Because after all, there's only one mind, and this is something we all have in common with one another, because each of us is a unique individual expression of that one mind. So we're establishing this spiritual understanding that right here and right now, we don't need a telephone, we don't need a computer, we don't need to be online to establish the spiritual truth about our brothers and sisters around the world faced with other situations that are difficult. Right here and right now, we have the ability and the power to establish blessings for those individuals who are in our thought. Now, a couple of years ago, we had pretty dramatic losses on Wall Street. And there was some evidence of arrogance and recklessness expressed and revealed. Greed also was exposed. This has had an adverse effect on some honest investors, smaller investors perhaps, and what was assumed in times past that were safe securities dwindled and in some cases disappeared. Even some blue chip stocks that were thought to be rock solid proved to be just as vulnerable to the market as some of the speculative stocks. Now, there's been some good recovery, but there are many individuals who haven't. In some instances, lifetime investments for later years have dwindled and disappeared, and there is no forward look for future security for those individuals as they weigh off the financial losses. Trust in the marketplace has been seriously undermined by deceit, selfish interests, and sort of blindly following a system of reasoning that pretty well took this country to the brink. We see it happening now in Europe as well. Now, this is just one time in our lives. It's a brief period. It won't remain this way. But we're capturing the subject today because it needs addressing. One may ask in these financial losses, after stating, oh boy, what do I do now after looking at the bottom of their report, their annual report or their weekly state or their monthly statement? And there may not be an immediate answer to them from a human standpoint. Now, our family was faced with similar conditions when the stock market took a 22% dive on a single day in 1987. It was also referred to as Black Friday. And while some of us don't have a stock portfolio or may even own a house, most understand what it means to be financially vulnerable. And though the community we lived in was one of the last to feel the squeeze, the downturn had a direct impact on the value of our house. Somebody here knows something of that, right? There are many, many properties in California that are underwater right now, And again, it's up to our establishing spiritual fact that can elevate the thought here, that can bring this picture back into a normal sense where there's no distortion of loss or lack or separation from good. And when we attempted to sell our house a couple of years later, the housing market had still not fully recovered, and we discovered that the equity that we had built into our house had diminished a great deal. Tenants of commercial properties that we rented out were also not meeting their payments on time. And in one case, costly litigation ensued. Notes on the sale of a business were also tardy. And added to these concerns was college tuition for two of our children. It was a time filled with financial pressure and emotional hardship. And not only did market prices plummet, so did my spirit. And it took considerable discomfort and prayer to finally understand that I wasn't my investment. I wasn't my house. I wasn't my income. I wasn't personally responsible for what had occurred, or for that matter, saving my investments. It was not God's intent to burden me. Indeed, God is our Savior. God would save us. So through a hefty amount of financial loss and some effective prayer, I was learning that first and foremost, I'm God's son. I'm his healthy, complete, and vibrant expression. Nothing can be added to me, nor anything taken from me. And that's the spiritual fact. And with this identity came my God-given dominion over self-doubt and fearful anticipation regarding the future. Science and health states man is the idea of spirit. He reflects the beatific presence, illumining the universe with light. Man is deathless, spiritual. He is above sin or frailty. He does not cross the barriers of time into the vast forever of life, but he coexists with God and the universe. Well, when this understanding of my spiritual dominion finally took hold, I reasoned that a blessing from God could never become a burden. We may want to take this into consideration now if we're dealing with the belief of aging, the belief of a loved one living in our home that needs special care. A blessing can never become a burden. Let me share an example with you. One morning I came out to we had a little sunroof in our house, or sunroom in our house. It was in Larchmont, New York. I'd come out to sit on this little couch in the sunroom and just contemplate quietly. It was a beautiful day. And as I sat down, I noticed that there was a big tennis shoe. It was a dirty tennis shoe stuck right underneath the couch where my feet were. And the other one I looked was up on the wall behind the couch. And I'm looking, I said, oh, my son, he's stuck those two tennis shoes there. And I got upset by it, and quite frankly, I got a little self-righteous about it. So I took those two tennis shoes, and I said, he doesn't show any appreciation at all, no respect towards his own clothing. I'm going to throw these things out. So I took them, and I threw them in the garbage. I figured at some point he's going to look for his tennis shoes, and he's going to ask me, and I'm going to say, well, you saw no value in them, so I just threw them out. So I went back, and I sat down on the couch. And I was just sort of gloating in my own self-righteousness. And it lasted for maybe 4 or 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I heard this voice, Johnny, go get the shoes. And I thought, yeah. And I went and I got the shoes. And I didn't just set them down. I slid one back under the couch and one back up between the couch and the wall. And the reason I did that, because I realized that those shoes were a clear proof that he was with us. We need to keep this in mind when we're cherishing each other, to value each other, and not let a limited understanding of ourselves or another rob us of the value that we have with each other. You know, during this process of selling our home, I was gaining spiritual dominion a little at a time. I reasoned that a blessing from God, as I said, could never be a burden. I reasoned further that blessings from God taking form as material objects, such as a house or income, were formed and sustained by God as spiritual ideas before their appearance in the human. Think about this just for a minute, that infinite mind thinks only in spiritual terms, and so anything that you and I are realizing good in the human realm has already evidenced fully in infinite mind. It just appears to be as a material form or a human identity. I was coming to understand that since mind is infinite in nature, it never runs out of new ways of proving its own vastness, its own wonder, its own supply for his creation. Slowly I was learning to translate a material sense of home and income and relationships back into spiritual ideas that could never be harmed or could never cause harm. Of course, this required me exercising spiritual sense. But in Science and Health we read, every object in material thought will be destroyed, but the spiritual idea, whose substance is in mind, is eternal. I think we can all agree that mortality is terminal. It concludes. But we're in the business of changing consciousness. We're in the business of establishing spiritual understanding that elevates us above that claim. So there's a changing of consciousness from a limited material perception of substance, home, and income to an unlimited sense, which is a God-given ability to define everything good as open-ended, sustained by a reservoir of infinite resources, which you might call God's divine economy. And within this divine economy, all is good and preserved forever. I was coming to better understand that everything good that I ever had was from Spirit. So it simply wasn't possible for me or my family to be deprived of God's intended good for each of us. I was enlarging my understanding to include a greater sense of good, that good is open-ended, no starting point, no conclusion. It simply is. I found support in these following words in Science and Health. All that really exists is the divine mind and its idea. And in this mind, the entire being is found harmonious and eternal. So it makes sense that the more we allow God to be God, the more we allow infinite mind to prevail as consciousness, the more we'll realize we're already in the kingdom, that each need is already met. Often, the desire is to fix the dream rather than to break the dream with what Mrs. Eddy calls the unbroken reality of scientific being. I was learning that God, divine love, was not only the source of the solution, but God was the solution. That Spirit was the only substance that could always be depended upon. And that His love, His power, and His understanding were strong and enduring. Listen to this. God is infinite mind and therefore omniscient. Infinite mind knows its own perfection and is all. So everything, every idea, activity, inspiration, or supply are in mind and are continually realized by mind. It's comforting to know that all we have or ever will have is preserved and protected by mind's realization of it. And human solutions are often the result of that understanding. At the same time, Jesus offered us wise counsel when he stated, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Jesus was warning his followers that true and lasting security can't be found in material accumulation, whether in the form of wealth, armaments, a muscular body, or even surrounded by personal friends. What is that understanding worth? Jesus doesn't leave us stranded without an answer, though. He tells his followers, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Well, what are these treasures in heaven that Jesus is referring to? Certainly harmony, security, lasting joy, a continued sense of well-being, a genuine love that we feel towards others and are recipients of, peace of mind. What are those worth? What are those worth? I ask you, where is this heavenly kingdom, and how does one find lasting peace and security within it? This is a question that we've asked ourselves. Jesus' statement implies that all that God has intended for us is presently available, that the kingdom of heaven is not a celestial location to be winged to after death. Rather, it's a perfect state of mind. And this state is the thought atmosphere of divine mind that I experienced during that automobile accident, and that is accessible through the study of Christian Science, that will open the door to a deeper understanding. Christian Science gives a marvelous definition of the kingdom of heaven. The reign of harmony in divine science, the realm of unerring, eternal, and omnipotent mind, the atmosphere of spirit where soul is supreme, filling one's consciousness with this understanding, with a present sense of truth and love, leaves no room for erroneous suggestions arguing as lack or fear or loneliness or loss. Now, listen, this is not Pollyanna. This isn't sticking our heads in the sand and ignoring what we're contending with. This is addressing it head on based on our understanding of God's presence and power. It requires mental discipline and a deep, deep faith that God is actually here. You recall what I sensed during the car accident. I referred to it as an enlarged sense of being, a sense of the supreme being. Well, the kingdom of heaven is an infinitely larger realm than a limited human perception based on the material senses. It's a spiritual realm, and within this spiritual realm, we discover our permanent place and purpose as God's child. We waken to see ourselves in the same light in which God, infinite love, is holding us presently. We realize that God is absolutely delighted with each of us, and that he's never lost sight of our perfection, our value, our promise, He also sees us entirely fulfilling our individual purposes to the maximum of good. Well, the human mind says, I beg to differ with that, John. I mean, look at my situation as it is right now. Look at my past history. I'm not living up to my full potential. I've fallen way short numerous ways. Look at me at this moment. But is this really the best standard of measurement? After all, in the record of creation, we read, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. In God, Spirit, he's not seeing a material, chaotic creation. He's seeing a spiritual universe, including spiritual man, governed by divine law and functioning in perfect harmony at this very moment. It's this understanding that prompts new desires in us to be and to do better, to act out to the maximum of good, proving spiritual man's perfection. And let me say this, it's never too late to see ourselves as God is seeing us. It's never too late. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to go to the Los Angeles jail downtown and speak to about 100 or so inmates. And this is the point I stressed. It's never too late. And to bring this understanding of God's love to the here and now. Because this is what we have. Mary Baker Eddy herself wrote, "We have no past, we own no past. We own no future, we possess only now." Now think about this just for a minute. The past is never going to come back. There's no point in rehearsing it beyond learning retrospective insights from it. The future is something that will be revealed based on our present sense. So it's here and now that we have. We have no past, we own no future, we possess only now. Christian Science comes to the rescue of mortals, saving them from themselves. It wakens the sinner from his stupid stupor. It seals the wounds of the brokenhearted and brings comfort and protection to those submerged in pain and loss. And it does this by gently ushering those burdened into a sincere consideration of spiritual life, a life that cannot be separated even for an instant from the life that is God, eternal life. This life is strong and enduring. It's buoyant and free. It takes us over. It lifts us up. It brings us in. It reminds us that we are God's expression and that we are reflecting the spiritual qualities of his staying power and joy. It enables us to outlast and overbear the sensations of mortal existence. It replaces these temporary, wavering senses with a constant spiritual sense that understands and sees man and the universe as evolving from perfection into perfection. Now, as you can see, these ideas I've just shared with you are spiritual and they're available to us at this moment. We simply need to yield to mind's infinite self-knowledge that is reflected through us at this very moment, and to eliminate from our thought the barriers of distrust, uncertainty, and hesitation to embrace God's allness that would separate us. Now, through life experience, Mary Baker Eddy wakened to the power of God as stated through Christian Science. Through trials and tribulations, mishaps and healings, prayer and revelation, Mary Baker Eddy discovered the divine laws of life, truth, and love. And she named her discovery Christian Science. Her sacrifices were many in her effort to understand and to prove and to convey this power of God that had come to her as realized through Christian Science. And from her discovery to her final breath, she always placed her love for God and humanity first by advancing the cause of Christian Science. She proved through her own personal struggles that this science of eternal being was fully accessible to those who followed the disciplined teachings of Christ, and that this devotion would guide and protect and provide for its adherents. Think about this just for a minute. How much of the time are we thinking about leaning on material income, material sources of comfort, material shelter, the weather, the clothing we wear, the relationships that we have? Just to take a little time each day and recognize that the only reason any of these things are surrounding us is because of Spirit and its sustaining power. It comes to us in the ways that we can understand it on an elementary basis, but it requires us to continue to grow in our understanding of Spirit as becoming all in all. Listen to what was said of Mary Baker Eddy. Mrs. Eddy has shown clear capacity in managing her own temporal affairs as she has in directing the interests of her church. Her entire motive has been an absorbed devotion to the cause of Christian Science, that the steps taken that have brought financial returns have been taken in the interest of this work and not for the sake of the money they would bring. In her own life, after her discovery, she never placed a desire for wealth, for power, or for position above her own humble efforts to lead others to her discovery. And though she gained modest wealth through her healing, teaching, and sale of her writings, Mary Baker Eddy kept her spiritual priorities in the forefront of her thought, and this always took care of her and provided for her. Now, this may be something some may want to consider here today, that true riches, true substance, true and lasting purpose are found in one's practice of Christ, the act and art of selfless giving. The satisfying measurement of a life is found in the good one does. I ask you, what happens to the statuettes, the medals, the plaques, and awards after one has passed from this scene? A few are placed in a museum, but most are wrapped in paper and boxed and stored in either the attic or the basement because folks don't know what to do with them. True satisfaction comes in measuring the struggle for good, selfless acts of kindness, anonymous gifts of philanthropy, and exercising acts of compassion in the face of fear, hatred, misunderstanding, and even deceit. These acts God has inspired, and these acts God knows. You know, I sold that house, and I sold it for a handsome profit. But it came by way of my handing it all over to God. Not giving up, not saying, oh, this is a mess, you take it. But rather, Father, this is a cherished part of my life. It's represented so much to me and my family. I need to put it back in your hands because I thought it was mine for a while. We can do this with loved ones. We can do this whatever personal concerns we're having. We can place it all back in the Father's hands and realize that they've always been there. Now, there are many different challenges that spur individuals to reach out to the healing power of Christian Science. Sometimes it's a health issue when one may be walking from the doctor's closed door to the car, and you're somewhere in between, and you stop for a moment with such a burdensome sense that you declare, oh boy, what do I do now? Who do I tell? Some years ago, I received a call from the husband of a friend. He was not a Christian Scientist. He told me that he had had a biopsy on a mole that appeared to be changing shape and had been informed that it was a deadly form of malignant cancer. He was also warned that if he chose to do nothing, his life would be considered to be much shorter. Now, since he wasn't scheduled for surgery for several weeks, and he was not taking any medication, I asked him, I told him I'd accept him as a patient. And it was soon revealed that his accountant had informed him that his business partner, who was also a very close lifetime friend, had stolen a sizable amount of money from the business. And he stated that he was enraged by this act and felt betrayed. He was deeply hurt. And I mentioned that it was possible that there was a relation between the hatred that he was feeling and the bodily discord that he was experiencing. And I encouraged him to allow himself to see God's love. And that this love of God, felt and expressed, would lead him free of this deep concern he was having over the loss and over the betrayal. No harmful sense could penetrate this love that he could experience. I encouraged him to allow himself to just be love. In everything that he did, in everything that he said, be the very expression of it. All it would really take was for him to change the ways that he was thinking and feeling about those circumstances. And to replace this hurt and this anger with compassion, with understanding, with humility. To see the man of God's creating right where others were unable to see. This is what Jesus did. This is what Jesus illustrated to us when he faced the cross. In an article entitled Love Your Enemies by Mary Baker Eddy, she admonishes the reader, hate no one, for hatred is a plague spot that spreads its virus and kills at last. My friend's husband, who was now my friend, was coming to understand this. And he was making the effort to overcome bitterness and hurt, feeling separated from good through a more Christly character. You know, we all face this at times. It may be just a daily thing or a weekly thing or a monthly thing, but we all have to face down resentment, hatred, feelings that somebody's asserted themselves too strongly. But these are all designed to draw you away from who you are. Right here and right now, you and I are the full, complete, healthy, purposeful expression of infinite good. This is never going to change. Not being a Christian Scientist, when the time for surgery arrived, he decided to have the operation, but no cancer was ever found. Now, up to this point, we've seen how a consciousness of God's presence understood and applied through the science of eternal being provides security, and how God's unconditional love realized and expressed can save humanity from wrongful actions, from illness, even death. We hunger to see this more fully realized. You know, I quoted St. Paul earlier in this lecture, and if you look at the life of St. Paul, I wonder how many times he asked himself, "Oh boy, what do I do now?" I mean, this was a guy that really faced down tremendous challenges. He was beaten several times. He suffered shipwreck a day and a night in the deep more than once. He was betrayed. He faced down weariness. He faced down pain. He faced down cold. He faced down hunger. He even faced down nakedness. And how does Paul meet these trials? He replies, "Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." Paul was a strange man. But Paul had realized that his strength came from God. He understood that the sufferings of his material self and doubt in his own limited human capacities often encountered in his travels forced him into humbly seeking assurance and comfort in the infinitude of life, what you might call the secret place of the Most High. What courage he had to declare that he took pleasure in infirmities. Paul had learned that discomfort and uncertainty humbled him and drove him deeper into the arms of love, where he discovered his true spiritual identity as God's son, finding lasting solace and strength. Now, we're nearing the end of this lecture, but I'd like to make another comment or two about this book, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, a book written for all ages. I can recall a time I was in the South. It was spring and it was very hot, well over 100. And I decided to hire a tennis pro to run me through some vigorous exercises. And after a little over an hour, I was wrung out, frankly, folks. And I thanked him and I headed back to my condo. And after arriving, I took a shower. And as I was drying myself off, I suddenly felt as though I was about to lose consciousness. And the suggestion of a heat stroke came to my thought. In this, "Oh boy, what do I do now" moment, I reached out to God for assurance. And when I did, I recalled a complete paragraph from this book, Science and Health. And as I was stating it with affirmation, I marveled that I was able to recite the entire paragraph because I had never made a special effort to memorize it. And after affirming these ideas, I began to feel steadier and was soon strengthened. Now, I didn't have a way of finding the paragraph in this book at the time, but I was committed to finding it. Strangely, within a day or so, I had lost all recollection of every word. Not one word could I come up with. And to this day, I've never remembered it. Still, like the words in Science and Health that appeared to me during that car accident, that paragraph was present when I most needed it. Why is that? Because this book is written on revelation. It is written out of revelation. It's the living word, just like Scripture is the living word. This book will meet the need as the need arises because it's alive. The truths that you read in this book are alive, ready to be used at the moment you encounter them. This book is written for the Arab housewife, for the Japanese businessman, for the Egyptian academic, for the South African merchant, for the New York City taxi cab driver. This book is written for everyone. In response to the question as to why humanity hadn't realized greater spiritual achievements by proving the spiritual directives found in science and health, Mary Baker Eddy answers, simply because the treasures of this textbook are not yet uncovered to the gaze of many men. The beauty of holiness is not yet won. What is this beauty of holiness but a clear sense of God's presence and power, what we referred to as the secret place of the Most High? Well, this beauty of holiness is what surrounded and calmed me while my car was turning over at 80 miles an hour. It's what inspired Mary Baker Eddy to press forward and provided for her in difficult times while establishing the cause of Christian Science. It's what enabled Jesus to express truth, bravely face the cross by proving life to be eternal, and ultimately to rise above the vain claim of mortal existence. It's where I found comfort and courage during our family's struggle over financial concerns. And when the beauty of holiness touched my friend's heart, it lifted him above hatred and anger and brought him healing of a dreadful disease. It was the beauty of holiness that I was able to resort to when passing out, and which led me to the perfect ideas from science and health that strengthened and inspired me. This beauty of holiness is here today. It's the rarefied atmosphere of spiritual consciousness charged with infinite intelligence that each is a part of and contributing to. And within this thought environment of spirit, perfection reigns. There are no hypnotic suggestions of discord, disappointment, disease, or death. In love's eternal mansion, every idea, coexistent with God, is continually safe and fresh and new. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. And I say amen and amen. Thanks for coming to this Christian Science lecture.